Benjamin Netanyahu faces criticism from his own government.
In a televised statement, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant stressed the need to lay the groundwork for alternative Palestinian rule at the same time as defeating Hamas.
Plus, Iran resumes crackdowns on women not wearing head coverings.
Women are looking for their freedom. Freedom of dressing themselves the way they think is appropriate.
And later, Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping meet in China, violence in the South Pacific, and American troops are in Poland. Today is Thursday, May 16th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Israel is continuing its push to eradicate Hamas. Israel's tanks pushed into the heart of Jabalia in northern Gaza on Thursday, facing anti-tank rockets and mortar bombs from militants concentrated there, while in the south, its forces pounded Rafah without advancing, Palestinian residents and militants said. Meanwhile, smoke was billowing along Israel's northern border and in the Golan Heights after a barrage of rockets was fired from Lebanon. An Israeli army statement said that over 40 launches were identified crossing from Lebanon, some of which were intercepted by air defense systems. None caused any injuries. The statement added that the IDF retaliated and struck the sources of the fire. Meanwhile, as the war rages on, Israel's defense minister publicly challenged Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Wednesday over the country's post-war plans for the Gaza Strip. Reuters' Diane Toh reports.
In a televised statement, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant stressed the need to lay the groundwork for alternative Palestinian rule at the same time as defeating Hamas. He said he'd been pushing the issue since the conflict broke out in October following Hamas's shock attack, but has received no response from the Israeli cabinet.
Unfortunately, this issue was not raised for debate, and worse, an alternative was not raised in its replacement. Indecision is in essence a decision. This leads to a dangerous course, which promotes the idea of Israeli military and civilian governance in Gaza. This is a negative and dangerous option for the state of Israel strategically, militarily, and from a security standpoint.
His comments mark the most vocal dissent from within Israel's top echelon against Netanyahu in the Gaza war. In a riposte that did not explicitly name Gallant, Netanyahu hinted that the retired admiral was making excuses for not yet having destroyed Hamas in a conflict now in its eighth month. But the conservative prime minister soon appeared to be outflanked within his own war cabinet. Centrist ex-general Benny Gantz, the only voting member of the cabinet other than Netanyahu and Gallant, said the defense minister had spoken the truth. Gallant's criticism over Gaza echoes that of Israel's strongest ally, the United States. Washington has tried to give a role to the internationally backed Palestinian Authority, which wields limited governance in the occupied West Bank. But Netanyahu has refused this, describing the Palestinian Authority as a hostile entity. On Wednesday, he repeated this position in a video statement within an hour of Gallant's remarks, saying Hamas must first be eliminated before any move to create an alternative Gaza government, and demanding the goal to be pursued without excuses. Netanyahu has said Israel would retain overall security control over Gaza after the war for the foreseeable future, though he has stopped short of describing this as an occupation, a status Washington does not want to see emerge.
That's Diane Toh of Reuters reporting. Now updating a story from Wednesday's broadcast, Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico was shot during what authorities say was a politically motivated assassination attempt. Olivia Zelino of Reuters has that story.
Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico suffered life-threatening injuries when he was shot in an attempted assassination on Wednesday. Fico was in the central town of Hanlova for a government meeting and was shaking hands with a crowd of people when a man near a barricade pulled out a gun and fired. Slovak media said the shooter was a 71-year-old man, though the motive was initially unclear. The country's interior minister said it was, quote, politically motivated. The 59-year-old Fico was rushed to a local hospital and then transported by helicopter to a regional capital for urgent treatment. Fico is no longer in life-threatening condition, according to a government minister. Slovakia's President Zuzana Čaputová said she was shocked by the shooting, saying it was, quote, an attack on democracy. The leftist prime minister returned to his role last October for the fourth time. He has drawn criticism for taking a more pro-Russian stance in the Ukrainian war, as well as initiating reforms of criminal law and the media, which have raised concerns over weakening the rule of law. The shooting has drawn international condemnation from U.S. President Joe Biden, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and other European leaders.
That's Reuters' Olivia Zelino reporting for us today. More videos are emerging from Iran showing police violently enforcing a one-month-old policy involving a tougher crackdown on women who refuse to fully cover their hair in public in accordance with Islamist regulations. The policy is called Noor, the Persian word for light. It's part of the Islamic Republic's decades-long system of compelling women to wear a veil or hijab. It's a practice detested by secular Iranians. One video widely shared on social media this week appears to show an Iranian police officer dragging a woman toward him and slapping her head repeatedly before throwing her into his car. The woman can be heard pleading with him to stop. Ali Sajidi is a managing editor with VOA's Persian service. My colleague Michael Lippin sat down with him and asked about the most dramatic images he's seen of the crackdown so far.
Well, I have seen a lot of images. Two, the most disturbing, one was the officer, police officer, was hitting a woman and pushing her into the car. The other one was that they're pushing girls, young girls, as young as, I don't know, 9, 10 years old, pushing them and damaged, you know, it's really hard to explain. I really cannot use any word for it. And that's horrible things, that horrible behavior they do with the women and young girls in all cities, especially in the smaller city. One of the 1,000 is going to be publicized. You know, the footage you saw, probably every day, every hour happens in different cities. But we only see few of them.
Can you give me some examples of where these incidents are happening?
Well, I saw it in Tehran, I saw it in Shiraz, I saw it in Isfahan, I saw it even in Mashhad, next to the shrine of Imam Reza, which is a religious city, a religious environment. Basically, people do not listen to the government. Women are looking for their freedom, freedom of dressing themselves the way they think is appropriate. And if you look at the other footages coming from Iran, basically people, especially women, are ignoring government, ignoring the decree.
Why are they ignoring?
Because, as I said, this is not a religious thing. This is something they feel that government is forcing them to do that just to show off, you know, their power. That's all. That's why they don't care about it. And I have to add that the women in Iran are really courageous. I never saw people so courageous standing up for a stupid rules by the government.
Well, we did see the Iranian police make some kind of statement after the video of that officer slapping a woman's head and throwing her into a car. They said this officer was violating rules and this officer would be suspended, investigated. What has been the reaction to that?
It is just a lip service. They're doing it last 40 years. Whenever something comes up that shows how brutal they are, they deny it. If there is a movie or picture of it, then they say, sorry, it happened, but we're going to remove that person or do this and that. Nothing will happen. Nothing will happen. Last month, there was a document coming out that the leader of Friday Prayer in Tehran basically grabbed a lot of lands worth millions of dollars, and then he's still there. He didn't even say sorry. So the corruption is amazing. It's not something that you can even see in the you know, primitive societies.
What do you think is going to happen next?
I think the civil resistance will continue. I don't think they can convince women to go back to hijab. That era is done. And it seems to me that some of them are understanding that. Look how many people in recent months they arrested from themselves, among their own followers. And I think we are getting to the end of an era, especially when it comes to the woman's dress.
That's VOA's Michael Lippin speaking with Ali Sajidi, managing editor of VOA's Persian service. You're listening to Flashpoint, Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. An update from Kyiv in just a moment. Now, an update from one of Europe's farthest outposts. France has declared an emergency on the Pacific island of New Caledonia on Wednesday after three young indigenous Kanak people and a police officer were killed in riots over electoral reforms. Ryan Chang of Reuters has the details.
France declared a state of emergency in its overseas territory, New Caledonia, on Wednesday. Riots in the past few days have led to the deaths of several indigenous Kanak people and a police official who died from a gunshot wound. The unrest came after Paris approved new changes to voting rules, letting French residents who've lived in New Caledonia for 10 years vote in provincial elections, a move the indigenous Kanak fear dilutes their votes. These images of burnt-out buildings and looted stores in the capital, Noumea, were filmed by Johan Fleurot, a 37-year-old businessman, on Thursday. He says he's had to pass through road blockades the past few days, controlled by armed men who threatened to beat up civilians and torch vehicles.
What is really happening is that as I move a lot to see family members or keep an eye on my properties, I see everything on the roads. I see the stores looted by the people. I see the fires in the docks, warehouses, and offices. I admit, even I carry a gun with me all the time to handle any situation.
Fleurot believes that the unrest was fueled by groups who sought the departure of non-indigenous Caledonians.
They want to scare people so that people, all Caledonians combined, or certain Caledonians, leave the country. It is a Caledonia that is not recognizable today.
The state of emergency announced this week is set to last 12 days. It imposes a curfew and bans public gatherings. France will also send police reinforcements to bolster local security forces. French troops have also been ordered to help secure New Caledonia's main port and airport. Authorities also decided to ban video app TikTok. The French government said the app helped rioters organize and amplified chaos during riots on France's mainland last summer, attracting troublemakers to the streets. Electoral reform is the latest flashpoint in a decades-long tussle over France's role in the mineral-rich island. New Caledonia, some 900 miles east of Australia in the Southwest Pacific, is the world's third largest nickel producer and has long been rocked by pro-independence movements. France annexed the island in 1853 and gave the colony the status of overseas territory in 1946.
That's Ryan Chang of Reuters. And now to Ukraine. The situation in the Kharkiv region remains tough as President Zelensky held a meeting with military officials. Meanwhile, emergency energy shutdowns are in place across the country. VOA correspondent Anna Chernikova has the details from Kyiv.
On Thursday, President Volodymyr Zelensky held a meeting with top military officials in Kharkiv.
Kharkivshchina, rayony poruch z kordonom.
Zelensky said that the meeting was devoted to the challenges at the front, in particular the volatile situation in the Kharkiv region. He noted that on Thursday the situation there is generally under control and Ukrainian troops are inflicting significant losses on the Russian side. But this part of the front line remains extremely tough, so the Ukrainian units will be strengthened accordingly. Also Thursday, the General Staff of Ukraine reported that over the last 24 hours, Ukrainian troops killed or wounded more than 1.5 thousand Russian soldiers. They also reported that the Ukrainian army did not allow the Russian forces to wedge into the depths of the urban area of Vovchansk in the Kharkiv region and gain a foothold there. However, the head of the Ministry of Internal Affairs, Igor Klimenko, said that in the northern part of Vovchansk, where active hostilities are taking place, the Russians are taking civilians captive. One man was shot dead when he tried to escape on foot and refused to obey the orders of the Russian forces. Earlier, the Prosecutor General's office reported on the shooting by the Russian forces of a civilian man in the village of Staritsa in the Vovchansk community. VOA cannot verify this information independently at this time. Meanwhile, the situation in the energy system across the country is also critical. Ukrainian energy operators announced on Wednesday that emergency energy shutdowns are to be applied in Kyiv, Kyiv region, Odessa region, Dnipropetrovsk region, and Donetsk region. In Kyiv, the emergency shutdowns were in action for 2 to 3 hours in the evening on May 15th and for a couple of hours more during the night. The shutdowns are also in action on Thursday, May 16th. In happier news, as Ukraine is experiencing a very tough moment, people are strengthening the traditions in their everyday lives. On May 16th, Ukraine is marking a national Vyshyvanka Day, a day to celebrate a traditional piece of cloth with national ornaments that Ukrainians treat as a national code and national identification. On Thursday, the streets of the Ukrainian cities are full of people wearing Vyshyvanka. Ukrainians believe their statehood and independence are alive, while traditions are alive and passed to the next generation. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
As Russia ramps up its offensive in eastern Ukraine, officials with the U.S. command in Eastern Europe say it's urgent for NATO to be ready for any possible confrontation. VOA's Eastern Europe bureau chief, Miroslava Gungadze, spoke with the American and Polish commanders during a U.S. Army transfer of authority ceremony in Bolesławiec, Poland.
10,000 U.S. troops are on rotation in Poland, a NATO front line. This week, the 1st Cavalry Division of the U.S. Army assumed control from the 3rd Infantry Division for the Eastern European mission. The U.S. military is working closely with NATO allies to strengthen deterrence. In 2020, it's reactivated its V-Corps, enhancing command and control for U.S. allied and partner forces in Europe. Lieutenant General Charles Costanza, the commanding general of V-Corps, who recently assumed leadership of the corps, says Russia represents a near-term threat to NATO.
I think that there's a little bit of a misperception that we have time and that Russia's taken a lot of losses and it's going to take them a while to rebuild and reconstitute. I don't have that view, and I think we need to be ready in the near term.
Ukrainian officials and Western open-source intelligence reports say Russia's losses in Ukraine have been heavy, with nearly 50,000 troops killed in action. But Costanza says Russia forces are swiftly rebuilding themselves, and while they are not as well trained as NATO troops, they have grown in size since the start of their full-scale invasion.
Also modernized, learning the lessons from fighting in Ukraine, which is going to be a problem for us in the West because Ukraine's using Western equipment. They are using Western techniques. Russia's learning how to defeat that.
He sees a real sense of urgency for NATO to be ready. The Polish partners concur and express their welcome to U.S. troops. Poland has always seen Russia as a threat, but Brigadier General Fajkowski, commander of the Polish Army's 11th Armored Cavalry Division, says all NATO allies now recognize severity of that threat.
Now when Russia invaded Ukraine, all masks are out. So now we know everything. Russian shows how they think, how they operate, and everything now is clear.
Polish military officials stress that throughout history and due to its geographic location in the heart of Europe, their country has often had to fight first. One reason, it currently spends almost 4% of its GDP on defense. The memories of Nazi occupation in World War II and Soviet domination in the period after taught Poland some painful lessons. Providing support for Ukraine now and helping train Ukrainian soldiers are signs that Poland is choosing to apply the lessons of the past wars to avoid suffering new ones. Miroslava Gungadze, VOA News, Bolesławiec, Poland.
On Thursday, Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a joint statement deepening China and Russia's comprehensive strategic partnership. Putin arrived early on Thursday for a two-day state visit that will include detailed talks on Ukraine, Asia energy, and trade with Xi, his most powerful political backer and fellow geopolitical rival of the United States. Xi said at a joint news conference that both countries agreed that a political settlement of the Ukrainian crisis would be the right direction. The two leaders also oversaw the signing of several bilateral agreements in sectors such as trade and infrastructure. In India, 18 million first-time voters in the country's ongoing general elections include millions of college students. Anjana Pasricha speaks to some students in New Delhi and finds out that many support Prime Minister Narendra Modi, but they want more focus on issues like development and jobs and less on religious issues that have dominated the campaign so far.
For undergraduate student Pavni Mishra, India's ongoing election campaign has not focused on issues relevant to young voters like her.
We should have a healthy competition in our politics rather than talking about religion or some other things. We should talk about education. We should talk about employment. We should talk about how we can empower our women. We should talk about how we can enlarge our startups in the country.
At election rallies in recent weeks, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has accused the main opposition Congress party of plans to give more benefits to Muslims if they are voted to power. It is seen as a bid to galvanize support in the Hindu-majority country in the multi-phased election that ends on June 1st. Modi and Congress party leader Rahul Gandhi, who leads an opposition alliance, are the main rivals. Both parties have promised development and jobs in their manifestos, but the campaign has become polarized. In the world's youngest country, that has disillusioned some students. Amaldev K is an undergraduate student at Delhi University.
We are still fighting about mythical creatures and gods and religions. We should rather focus on the development of the country.
For many students, the top concern is getting suitable jobs when they graduate. Shreyas Sood is a college student.
I just want a fair and just government which cares for everybody and which obviously ensures employment for people.
They have reason to worry. The joblessness rate for graduates is nearly 30%, according to the International Monetary Fund, 9 times higher than for the lesser educated. Despite their concerns, many support Prime Minister Modi, seen as a strong leader who has improved India's image overseas. B. Prerna is an undergraduate student.
You can thrust on him. I feel that India is in safer hands if it's Modi.
Some say a weak opposition has limited their choices. In the last decade, Modi's Bharatiya Janata Party has dislodged the Congress Party as the country's dominant political party. Satvik Sharma is a college student.
You know, the country and the youth of the country is becoming religiously too radical, be it any religion. I just want the current government to be a little liberal, to be the youth a little liberal and, you know, think about the country as a whole and not as, you know, their religion as the supreme and anything like that.
Modi's personal popularity and his appeal to many Hindu voters is expected to power his Hindu nationalist party to victory. Anjana Pasricha, VOA News, New Delhi.
And that's going to wrap up today's show. There's more coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with the 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.